extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
We'll see about that. 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. Welcome or welcome back. Give me a call if you'd like to join the conversation, 888-914-9149. As promised, we're going to go right back to Jim in San Diego, who just called just before the break. So let's take it from the top, Jim.
Okay. Well, as I say, I think there's a flaw. I don't call it an error because it's more subtle than that. But I think there's a flaw in the argument you use, that those of you that don't have this error of the extremist group are being punished because of their error that they're attacking the church and separating themselves and so on, okay?
Okay.
And the flaw I see, I best explain, years ago, a Catholic priest was, we were attending a comment by him and that, and he explained the Mass in this way, and I slightly reworded, I mean, 50 years, I don't remember the exact details, but I've got the general thrust, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he described the Mass as at its core, there's a 50 million carat diamond, priceless, almost beyond grasping. And that the church had encrusted a setting around that core value with a beautiful setting of diamonds worth millions of dollars. I believe what I hear from you, you're focusing on the setting that the church has given, the exact form it's presented in, and ignoring that 50 million carat core.
No, Jim.
And
no,
I can give an
not at all. I mean, quite the opposite. In fact, I've talked about how I've spent a lot of time talking on this program about how the Mass is the Mass is the Mass. And in pointing out that the new order of the Mass, the new rite of the Mass promulgated by Pope Paul VI, is just as spiritually efficacious as the traditional Latin Mass. I've also pointed out that the first Mass that Jesus celebrated in the upper room did not have elaborate vestments. There were no bells being rung. There was no incense. There was no Gregorian chant. And it was devoid of all of those beautiful outward aspects of the traditional Mass, but it's still just as much the Mass, which is putting it lightly. So I've argued exactly the opposite of what you think I'm saying on this issue. And furthermore, and I'll let you continue, Jim. I just want to point this out. You're mistaken if you think I'm making an argument about people being punished for it. What I'm saying is there are people who are reacting that way. And that's how they're interpreting this move on the part of Pope Francis. Why are we being punished? They're saying, because we didn't do the things that in your letter and in the motu proprio you said are the reasons why you did this. We're not part of those things. So this is not an argument on my part. I'm not proposing that that's necessarily the case. I'm simply reporting that there are people who feel that way because of what has happened. Now, I don't know if my clarification means anything, but that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, I apologize to you for my misunderstanding that you were pointing out how people react rather than expressing it as a view of your own. I apologize for that. I did misunderstand that.
No problem. No problem.
There's two things I'd like to say. One is, granted that everything you say about the beauty of the Latin Mass and its uplifting character, it has a terrible defect that the vast majority of people, haven't a clue as to actually understanding the heart of the Mass in the Latin Mass.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
What
I'm a convert. Okay, and I got the general trend. But I have picked up things out of the current Mass that I totally missed. Had no awareness. I understood intellectually, but there were details I missed. And I'll give you one example of that. I'll ask you a question. What does the priest say almost immediately after the consecration? And right after the consecration, there is a statement of response
fide.
From the people.
He says, "Mysterium fide," the mystery of faith.
Mystery of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
What else does he say? It's right after the...
I don't want to play cat and mouse, question and answer, but go ahead and make your point, Jim. I'm all ears.
Okay. He says, we offer the bread of life and the chalice of salvation. Mm-hmm. And I only tumbled on what he was saying there and its significance in the, just a few months ago. And I've been, I've looked into the Mass rather seriously and even written a rather extensive piece on it, titled the Bread of Life. I'm sorry, the Lamb of God.
But what was John, you mentioned there was a flaw that you saw that people are unaware of. What is that flaw?
You're focusing on the setting, the things around it, the language, various things about the Mass and how they are uplifting. And I don't hear you really stressing what is at the heart of the Mass, what Jesus is doing there, what it's all about.
Well, I don't know how often you listen to the program, Jim, but I've touched on that topic countless times, and I did give you a quick version of it just a moment ago, and that is that the essence of the Mass does not depend upon the external trappings. And although aesthetically speaking, incense and bells and beautiful vestments and all of those things are beautiful from an aesthetic standpoint, they're not the essence of the Mass. And I just pointed out to you that the Mass that Jesus celebrated in the upper room did not have any of those outward trappings, and yet it was the fullest, most spiritually efficacious celebration of the Mass, as is any other valid celebration of the Mass. I've been stressing that point, so I'm not sure why you're trying to tag me with the very position that I'm trying to disabuse people of.
I have one question for you, Patrick. What is the essence of the Mass? Because I didn't hear you describe it there. You said all the things it wasn't. And very good. I commend you. I'm not in a disagreement about those things you've said.
Yeah, the Mass is the perfect sacrifice that Christ offered on the cross. This is my body which will be given up for you. This is my blood that will be poured out for you and for many. And he actually did what he said he would do on Holy Thursday. He did it on the cross the following day. That's the essence of the Mass. Christ, the perfect victim and our high priest, offering himself as a propitiation for the rest of us, for all of us. That's the essence of the Mass.
Well, it's certainly a major part of the efficacy of the Mass, but I think he offered something else also.
All right, Jim. I'm not really sure what your game plan is here. Do you want to just nitpick? Because it seems like, well, anyway, I'm glad we had the conversation, and I'm glad you called. Thank you. Let's go to, is it Sanok or Kanok in Miami? Do I have the name right? Hello?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I'm here.
Tell me your first name, please.
It's Kanok, Patrick.
Kanok, I'm sorry. Well, welcome.
It's okay. Thank you. And I just want to quickly say and reflect on the conversation earlier about the priests that are put in position to lead us, and they still are living double lives and still doing, you know, ungodly things. I completely 100% agree with you. Okay. You know, us being like children, you know, learning and being molded into a way of presenting ourselves before our Father, because that's who God is to us. God is our Father. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God loves us completely 100%. And God understands that as children, we are not going to know 100% what to do, how to do it, and when to do it. So this is why God accepts certain highly people, certain elders, to teach us and lead us. And I just want to reflect on a scripture, because I don't never want to speak out of my own thinking. You know, we were left scriptures for a reason, to be our law, to be our way, to be, you know, something that we can fall on. And Leviticus chapter 4, verse 3 says, if the anointed priest sins, bringing guilt on the people, he must bring to the Lord, our God, a young bull without defect as a sin offering for the sin he has committed. If it was the priest that sinned, why were all of the people of Israel considered guilty, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I believe, I know two possibilities are typically basically presented to explain. First, it is possible that the priest's sin impacted us, can impact us, you know, because the priest is a leader as well as one of the people. You know, and in this case, the idea is that the sin of a leader influences everyone under him negatively.
Right.
So, you know, and then a second reason, you know, being that the sin of the priest would lead others like us, the children, people into sin, is certainly seen elsewhere in Scripture, which would be Hosea chapter 4:6 in particular, condemns ungodly leadership by the Jewish priests. Mm-hmm. You know, saying, are destroyed from lack of knowledge because you have rejected knowledge. I also reject you as my priest. So
There's another dimension, if I may just add this in, Canuck. And that is that the priest represents the people. So obviously, you don't have all the people at the altar offering the sacrifice. The priest is there representing the people. So when the priest himself is unworthy, it has an effect in that sense also on the people. There's so much here. Yeah.
Okay. And you know, Patrick, let me tell you something. I'm so grateful that the Father has, you know, because like you said, we still, you know, although there are some flaws in certain individuals all across the world, priests and people, we still have to, you know, give that thanks for the good people that are out there that are pushing, you know, the truth. You know, because everyone wants to focus that, you know, just because Jesus did what Jesus did, you know, if you sin, no sin is greater than no. We're not working to just accept the sin. We're working to recognize the sin, like you spoke to the gentleman before. Confession, still going to that confession, still being a part of that, so that at some point you can kill that sin. We're not just, you know, accepting the sin as it is and saying, okay. And
Canuck,
like
I have
said,
a question for you. When you heard that story about the Monsignor who had to step down because of the hookup apps and everything that we talked about, as a regular person, you're not a priest, obviously. What was your reaction to that? How did that make you feel when you heard the news about that?
Well, I feel like this. We deserve godly priests, okay? We deserve godly leadership. We deserve people who are devoted and honest and in truth to the Most High, to our Father. And if they can take responsibility and recognize, okay, I was not ready for this position to be, like you said, the sacrifice for the people. I was not ready for this. I didn't know that, you know, I still had some things I had to work on. I'm willing to take a step down. That is what a true leader would do, because we can't jeopardize our souls. Our souls are in the hands of these priests, okay, that are taking that sacrifice for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say one more thing, Pratchett.
Okay, go ahead, Canuck.
If you don't mind, I do not knock the people who have been through some traumatizing things, you know, even as a child on up, who have not yet come to that light of being honest and confessing who they are and ready to move forward. I don't knock those people. They still have time. This is solely for the priests who are aware of the laws that are in place for them and for us as the people to get better connected to our Father. Because like the guy said, you know, should we be afraid to be sent to hell, or should we fear, you know, our Father? Our Father loves us. Our Father is completely aware and understands what it takes to be here on this bubble, on this earth.
I agree.
So our Father, set certain things here for us to not be just completely like, no, you're just going to go to hell. No, this is why we have laws. This is why we have certain elders who understands and aware of this.
And you know, Patrick, what? Even more so, Canuck, I'm with you on that. I'm 100%. Even more so, the mercy and the patience that God has with us. When I think about how patient he's been with me, my gosh, and the mercy that he's shown to me that I did not deserve, that to me really, you know, if nothing else, that is a great motivator to want to be a better person. I'm sure you and I agree on that. Well, thank you. This has been a fascinating conversation. I always enjoy hearing from you, and I'm glad you called. 888-914-9149. Let's go. You know, by the way, since we've been talking a little bit here about the traditional mass and such, I just want to share with you an announcement that was made yesterday, and this is by Archbishop Broglio. He is the Archbishop for the Military Vicariate, for the Military Services. Now, this, in essence, as I understand it from a canon law standpoint, is the equivalent of an archdiocese that spans the whole globe. And he is the Archbishop for all Catholic men and women in uniform. So if you're in the military, in the U.S. military, then he is your Archbishop, no matter where in the world you are. And here is the letter that he issued day before yesterday. It was actually in the afternoon, day before yesterday. So it's addressed to all priests in the military. What is truly pastoral always begins with the truth. On the 16th of July, the Bishop of Rome promulgated a motu proprio Traditionis Custodes, regulating, and that stands for custodians or guardians of tradition, regulating the use of the extraordinary form for the Latin Church. That's referring to the traditional Latin Mass. I am personally aware that for many of the faithful, I am privileged to shepherd. This celebration of the Mass and sacraments has been a source of immense blessing and growth. Concerning Article 5 of the above-mentioned document, I grant permission, and this is the section where the Holy Father says that the bishop is the competent authority, the sole competent authority to determine these matters in his own diocese. So he's referring to that section. And he says, therefore, I grant permission to those priests with AMS faculties. Now, AMS refers to Archdiocese for Military Services. That's the title of this archdiocese. I grant permission to those priests with AMS faculties who already make use of the same extraordinary form to continue to do so until the same priests make the required formal request, even digitally. Any other priests who desire to celebrate the same form or groups, four groups of AMS faithful, are to make a formal request digitally is fine, and he gives his email address. I will continue to study and consider the implications of this document for the good of the Christian faithful of this global archdiocese. Most Reverend Timothy Broglio. He's the Archbishop. So as you can see, this is one of those things in the aftermath of the motu proprio that are interesting to watch, and that is the Holy Father gave the bishops this competence and informed them that this is their duty to regulate this, and more and more and more and more and more of them are saying, okay, yes, Holy Father, and we're going to continue to permit the traditional Latin Mass to flourish as it has been, and the priests who can celebrate it have the permission to celebrate it, and there's now the requirement of having a letter that was sent in or that would be sent in requesting this. So Archbishop Broglio here is saying, you can send it to me by email if you want to. Here's my email address. So I'm heartened, I'm pleased to see that there is a widespread willingness on the part of many bishops around the country to foster the traditional Latin Mass and to seek the kind of unity that the Holy Father is saying that we need to strive for. Thought you'd like to know about that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to John in Phoenix. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Patrick. I am really enjoying your conversation today. I'm a pre-Vatican II altar boy, and I do kind of miss the Latin Mass, but I also get a lot out of the post-Vatican II Mass. Mm-hmm. I remember when the priest had his back to the people. But what I'm really enjoying, I always listen to what you say because it's so enlightening. And I've never heard you say anything that I think is incorrect. But what I do hear, a lot of people calling in who seem to listen in order to respond rather than understand what you're telling them. And I admire so much the patience that you have in dealing with some callers. And I just wanted to let you know that I find that as valuable, your presentation and your means of presentation, as valuable as what you say. And I just want to thank you for that, because you're a role model for somebody who's trying to be more patient with people.
Thank you, John. That means a lot. I'm grateful to hear that you feel that way. And just keep me in your prayers, because, you know, like anyone else, it's easy to become impatient. And I don't want to be impatient with anybody. But I'm glad that you feel that way, John. Thank you. What a great way to wrap up this segment. Safe driving out there, John. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. The number is 888-914-9149. By the way, if you're trying to kick the smoking habit, or you know somebody who's trying to kick the smoking habit, I've got some important news for you. about a popular medicine that is problematic, they found out. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
If you are trying to kick the smoking habit, or you know somebody who's trying to kick it, you might be using the anti-smoking drug Chantix. And Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company that produces Chantix, they just announced they're recalling 12 lots of it. Now, I don't know how much is in a lot. I mean, it could be a shipping container worth. I don't know. But they're saying 12 lots of this popular anti-smoking drug Chantix. And they're recalling it because they've discovered that it contains high levels of a chemical that can cause cancer. Yay! The voluntary move expands on a recall that covered 9 lots of Chantix, which goes by the generic name varenicline, and was issued to warehouses earlier this month. Pfizer said it found N-nitrosovarenicline, which is a type of organic compound called nitrosamine, in the product at levels higher than the company's so-called acceptable, I don't know why they say so-called, but it's acceptable limit. Nitrosamines can develop naturally in a broad range of items, including meats, cheeses, cosmetics, and the FDA has warned that long-term exposure to high levels of nitrosamines can increase your risk of cancer. So there's an article about this. It's got specifics about the lots, and you can, I guess, look on the packaging to figure out if you've got one of those that are being recalled. It's worth your while to take a look at. This article will be posted on the show Twitter feed, which you can access by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Back to the phones now. Let's go to Anthony in Milwaukee. Good morning, Anthony. Hello, Anthony. All right. Maybe Anthony is down the hall making a sandwich.
Hello there.
Yeah, maybe we'll come back to Anthony. Can you get him sorted, Jim? And we'll come back to him. Let's go to Gilbert now in Austin, Texas. Hi, Gilbert.
Hey, Patrick. I was going to go straight into it. Let's see. So I grew up in Novus Ordis, and I've been going to Latin Mass for the last 5 years. Love it. I prefer it. I won't dare say that Novus Ordis is not valid. I wouldn't say that, never. But it occurred to me, it came to me yesterday, well, the day before yesterday, after a weekend of being, dejected over the whole papal directive that just came out this past Friday, mm-hmm. Regarding the Latin Mass and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it came to me that a lot of the saints went through persecutions, even, of course, from people who don't even believe in God, but even from within the church itself, even from people within the church who may have had a reputation of scandal around themselves, mm-hmm. and they were still being persecuted. And yet those same saints would still vehemently defend the church and defend those who were persecuting them. Mm-hmm. And, so that gave me some consolation right there. I was very grateful to receive that consolation. And I also was reminded of Proverbs 27:17, where iron sharpens iron, so shall a man sharpen another, So I think this is good because this is going to allow a lot of Latin Mass Catholics who are, predominantly known to be more traditional, more conservative, more believing in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, and that their lives is just centered around the church, and that I think that's going to be good for all the rest of the Catholics who are out there who are, as studies and statistics have shown, that they don't even believe in the real presence.
I understand.
Promote abortion.
So the net effect can be that people will will learn how to be more humble. Is that the point, or more docile? What's the end game there?
I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be, well, I guess it would be the equivalent of having, and I've heard it mentioned it this way too. It's the equivalent of having Navy SEALs being, you know, now dispersed among the, you know, the general infantry, you know, like Special Forces being now dispersed among the general infantry. Now you're going to have those general infantry going to be picking up habits from Special Forces. So I see.
So in other words, are you comparing the traditional Latin Mass attendees to the Special Forces, and the regular infantry would be those who go to the new rite of the Mass?
Only because of examples of behavior and attitudes that you see, that, you know, a lot of them, they don't believe in the real presence, or they support abortion, you know, promoting political candidates, and they see nothing wrong with it, or they promote LGBT, you know, marriage and blessing of gay marriage, just like in Germany and stuff. So, you know, so I think maybe this is a good way to, you know, kind of spread it out, the faithfulness, you know.
I think that presupposes, though, Gilbert, that people who prefer the traditional Latin Mass are going to stop going, or that it will no longer be available. Therefore, they will suddenly now start going to the new rite of the Mass. I suppose that's true in some cases, especially if the traditional Mass is suppressed, for lack of a better term, if it's suppressed in a given locality. I could see where that would happen. I see your point. I don't disagree with you. I'm just not so sure we're likely to see a wholesale shift away from the traditional Latin Mass on the part of the people who love it, and then suddenly start going to the new rite of the Mass. Some will, and I think it's important for people to recognize, as I'm sure you do, that the Mass is the Mass is the Mass. And although we may be attached to and prefer the beauty of the traditional Latin Mass, I certainly love it. I certainly have been very grateful for my opportunities to worship at the traditional Latin Mass, even though I attend a Novus Ordo parish. Nonetheless, the Mass is the Mass is the Mass. So if part of what good may come out of all this is that people have a clearer recognition of that reality, so much the better. And maybe that's the kind of thing you're talking about, kind of a gradual, ongoing enhancement of our love for the Mass and our love for Christ in the Eucharist. If that's what you're saying, I certainly agree with that. And I'm glad you called. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, do you have the audio of the, I just want to get the title of it correct here, the Lift Every Voice and Sing song, which is also known as the Black National Anthem. Do you have that?
I have one version of it. I'm not that familiar with it, and so this morning I dove deep and I listened to five or six different versions, and this one seemed to probably be the easiest, you know, to play on the air.
Okay. So let me press pause. Thanks for getting that. So here's the background. Black Entertainment News, I guess, has an article on how the NFL has announced it's now going to include the Black National Anthem during pregame ceremonies. It's called Lift Every Voice and Sing. And this was a song that goes back to, around 1900, I believe. According to the Front Office Sports, performing the Black National Anthem is part of the NFL's social justice messaging initiative. However, the outlet also reported that the NFL declined to comment on this. Lift Every Voice and Sing was originally written as a poem by James Weldon Johnson in 1900, and his brother, John Rosamond Johnson, later composed music to accompany the lyrics. The song became a critical part of history, and the NAACP has used it as a rallying call during civil rights movements, the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s. And so this is now part of the pregame festivities. And since maybe some people have never heard it before, why don't we play a little bit of it? This is the song called Lift Every Voice and Sing, also known as the Black National Anthem.
Let our reach
rather a beautiful song, if you ask me. I like the message, and I like the gospel way of singing it.
There's a Ray Charles version out there that I almost pick because it's just awesome. But
anything Ray Charles did was awesome.
Yeah, he's gold. That's very pretty.
Okay, so that's for all you sports fans, NFL fans, just FYI. And there it is. If you want to read more about it, you can see the article on the show Twitter feed, at P Madrid Show. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Martin now in Ontario, California. Hi, Martin.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. Hey, yesterday there was a teacher that called in and talked about why CRT is so prevalent in public school. You had asked him about that, and I thought off the cuff that was a pretty good answer, but I jotted a few things down, too, because I'm a teacher. I'm a high school teacher. And, okay, so here are the things. So first of all, I resigned from the teacher's union maybe about 15 years ago or so.
Okay.
And thanks to the Janus ruling, not one dime goes to NEA or any of that stuff. So I hope other conservative teachers recognize this and go in that direction.
Now, can you be – let me ask you a question. Can you be – can you still be a teacher and not be persecuted or penalized in some way and not be in the teacher's union?
And that's one of the reasons why a lot of conservative teachers don't. And then they're afraid that if they don't, they're not going to have union protection. I really think it depends on the district. In my case, they just said, okay, there were people that were trying to, you know, convince me that it's not a good idea and I should do this. But I've not felt persecution. But I don't know if this CRT thing is going to open up a new... I'm sorry?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but would any teacher roaming the halls of, you know, whatever the school is, would that teacher necessarily know the status of any other teacher, whether or not that teacher is in the union or not in the union? Or is that private information, or is it just well known who's in and who's not in?
I think it's private. I don't think anybody broadcasts that. But like I said, with CRT becoming very prevalent, I'm wondering how many people are going to start seeking out conservative teachers or non-union teachers. At this point at my school, that's not an issue. I know that there are some teachers that were very upset about Janus and started making political statements about it. And it's usually from the liberal side, but I've not felt persecution.
Okay. So give me your rundown on you said you had some points you wanted to make about CRT.
Okay. So, I mean, a lot of people, they choose to become teachers because they're social warriors. They're social justice warriors. And then they go to colleges where when they join the education program, they are being taught by other social justice warriors. So it just becomes something normal or something that's embedded in their teacher training, and that's how they see it. And then, so they live in this bubble. It's a very liberal bubble. And I have some friends that I get along with these guys dearly, and I try not to talk politics with them because then we start going back and forth. But I could see that they live in a bubble. They don't hear the criticism because they're getting all of their news from networks where the people support this. And a lot of them don't even know clearly what they're fighting for.
I'm with you on all this. I know these items to be true. So tell me, what are your thoughts about CRT? I think that's what you led with.
Right.
That you had some additional thoughts.
I'm against it. You know, it is one of those things that's just going to divide more people. And, you know, the union support it. The administration is... Many of the teachers are afraid of the union. So are the administrators.
Yeah, so give me you got me all anxious to hear these insights, and I want to hear them. What are they?
Well, that's part of it. You know, it's... If you are going against this, you're not woke, and unions are woke, and teachers that don't want to, that are not woke, don't want to challenge the union. They don't want to stand out. And, you know, the administration sometimes is cowed by the union. Sometimes it's the school board, people that are elected who are social justice warriors. And it's
Cyrus,
just
do we have
part.
The audio of the lady that we played yesterday at the PTA meeting? Do you have that?
I heard that. Yeah.
Did you hear that, Martin? Wasn't that amazing?
It's miserable.
Do you hear? Okay, now pause for a second. Cyrus, first of all, do you have that audio that we can play?
I can find it in just a
couple
of seconds.
Okay, find it if you would. So, Martin, we're going to hear from her again. It's kind of hard on the ears, but when you hear this, you already heard it. Are there people like that roaming the halls in the school where you teach or in the school district that you're in?
You know, in my particular district, not so much. I'm thankful that we have a superintendent that doesn't seem to be woke, but there is enough evidence that he is going to lean in that direction because that's where the history is going, the arc of history. But there are teachers that are pretty radical, and I know that there are teachers that use their podium to say, hey, conservatives are evil and they are anti-racist, and they'll do that. I don't. You know, I try and be right in the middle, but not that. I think there are some teachers that have integrity and do that, but other teachers do that, and again, they're in a bubble. They think they are doing right. And I don't know if this whole CRT is going to make us have to take a stand or draw a line. I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, all right, am I ready to retire early in case I use that as a protest? Or am I willing to stand here and be that guy, but then I don't have union protection? I am a member of the American Association of Educators that is conservative and is opposed to CRT. But I don't know, this could be one of these wars that breaks out. It's just ugly. And you know what the worst thing is, Patrick? Mm-hmm. Our students do not know basic skills. Yesterday, I was trying to explain to the kids why just not doing work, getting this zero and getting that zero hurts them. I realized I had to teach these kids simple fractions, percentages, just for them to understand why always these zeros. A lot of kids, they'll start off with an A.
Hey, Martin, I got to press on here, but listen to the PTA. What was she? She was the vice president of training, Cyrus. Is that what her title was?
That's right. Fairfax, right?
Okay. So, Martin, you're in that world. Just one more time. Hate to do it to you, buddy, but here is one of these people who is talking to, it's a PTA gathering, and it seems to me that most of the people who were there were like digging this that she had to say. And this got her in trouble, so she's no longer in that position. But here's what she said.
Let's prepare our children for a world they deserve. Let's deny this off-key band of people that are anti-education, anti-teacher, anti-equity, anti-history, anti-racial reckoning, anti-opportunities, anti-health people, anti-diversity, anti-platform, anti-science, anti-change agent, anti-social justice, anti-healthcare, anti-worker, anti-LGBTQ+, anti-children, anti-healthcare, anti-worker, anti-environment, anti-emissions policy change, anti-inclusion, anti-live and let live people. Let them die. Don't let these uncomfortable people.
I don't know which is more unnerving, the fact that that woman says that or the fact that you've got all those people who are applauding her for saying that. Both and is not a great combination, if you ask me. Thank you, Cyrus. Let's go to...
I'm still looking for those anti-help people. I haven't run across any yet.
Well, you know, what's the other one?
I've run into people that aren't exactly... pro-help other right. people, but I've never run into any anti-help people.
Everybody needs help sometime.
That's right. And you know what? Everybody wants to rule the world.
Everybody cries sometimes. Hey, that's a good way of going to, I don't know, a break. Let's do that. We'll come right back to the phones right after this. You never know what you're going to hear on the Patrick Madrid Show, that's for sure. I'll be right back. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
I can deliver the good stuff, Cyrus. I don't think I can do or whatever he did at the beginning. That's beyond my powers.
Oh, I wish I was recording. Can you do that for me one more time?
Not happening. Let's go to Irina in Madison, Wisconsin. Hello, Irina.
Hello, Patrick. This kind of dovetails nicely with the gentleman who called from the school district about the crazy world we are living in. So I'm going back to the conversation you first started about people being able to be tracked on apps.
Right.
Well, so it seems like a very dangerous precedent to set, kind of like one of those evil things that good might come out of. And I was reminded so much of Michael O'Brien's Father Elijah during this conversation you were having about the priests and the apps. I recently reread it, and it's just such a fantastic work for those who don't know it, that like captures a lot
it's
of the persecutions that our Lord, that our Lord promises, and a lot of the spirit of the world that seems to be coming out. So my, you know, my question, I'd like to take your opinion on how much energy, how much voice should we be offering to offset, you know, to fight against these dangerous precedents that are being set in school districts, in, you know, people being okay with the idea of priests being tracked, you know, how much should we fight that versus how much should we, you know, do that kind of transparent life, pursuing simple charity? You know, do you ever have a feeling like we should do more one or the other?
In terms of speaking out, what is the other option? Sure. In addition to speaking out?
Just kind of, you know, putting our heads down, like loving those around us, like just keeping it simple, like versus being more, yes, outspoken.
More vocal, pushing back. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I see.
Yes,
so
exactly.
To adopt a passive approach as opposed to an active approach or pushing back.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, knowing things will get worse, you know, before the end of time, before they get better, do we just kind of take it like, well, this is just what's going to happen to the world? Or do we put more fight into it?
Yes. So
you know,
Jesus,
what,
when he was being interrogated, he you remember what he said to Pilate, I believe it was, is my kingdom is not of this world. So for me, my understanding of what it means to be a follower of Jesus is to recognize that we want to save souls, but we're not here to build the kingdom in this world. The church exists as a sojourner. In other words, we're Noah's Ark is the analogy that I find very helpful. We're in a storm and we have a destination and we'll get there as long as you stay on the ark. And it's probably going to be a pretty miserable journey most of the time, but you'll get to where you want to go. And that's the purpose of our life here. Our mortal life is transitory. We're not from here. We're not going to stay here. We're heading to our eternal homeland. So for that reason, I do understand the point you're making about to what extent should we really be fighting against this? I understand that because ultimately it's somewhat futile in any case. We're never going to terraform this earth, so to speak, in the sense that we're never going to turn it into what it should be. People along the way, in a person-specific manner, will be terraformed, to use that analogy. In other words, they will be saved, and we want to help as many people as possible get to heaven, but we're not here to fix this life and make it what it should be. Do the best we can, person-specific, and then move forward. So I definitely, in my approach kind of takes that into account, which is why I think Jesus said to his apostles, we just had this reading this past Sunday, if you go into a town and they won't listen to you and they reject you, just, okay, leave. Just shake the dust off your sandals and leave. They're not commanded to stay there and push back as hard as they can for as long as they can. Do what you can and then move on. That's what I interpret Jesus to be saying there. Do the best you can and then move on. So I take that approach to it. Now, should we not talk about things at all? No, I don't think that that's the case. And you hear me every day, I'm talking about things like this, because I do believe that there is a role and a need for people like you and me and all the people who are listening to have a voice in this wilderness and to speak the truth in love. So we should continue to do that. So I'm not suggesting that we become completely passive or supine, but at the same time, to recognize that the goal ultimately is not to remake the world the way it should be, because it'll never happen. We'll never accomplish that. But rather to do that in our own hearts and to help as many people around us as possible and move forward. So if I'm understanding your question correctly, Irina, I see a both-and approach, but with a heavy emphasis on realizing that this is not a permanent fix. Does that make sense?
Right,
do you see
right.
Where I'm coming from?
It does. And I think that addresses a lot of the guilt that, you know, sometimes I feel in being a stay-at-home mom with these little kids. Like, I'm so into my own little world that I'm like, should I be speaking out more? Should I be, you know, kind of trying to, you know, address these great evils in the world? But you reminding me that perhaps a soul, investing in a soul is going to be much better on all accounts than investing in a problem, that helps me not feel bad about the, quote, you know, lack of effort that I'm putting into
I'm
the
glad.
Fight.
And you know, when you get to your exit interview, as we all will when the time comes, You know, you're I guarantee you, I think I'm on safe ground by saying this. I think I can guarantee you that the Lord is not going to say, Irina, how come you were not on Facebook more often waving the flag? How come you weren't out marching? Why didn't you do more of that? But he will be saying, now let's talk about how you raised your children. And let's talk about your own soul.
Mea culpa.
You know what I mean? So it seems to me that you're doing, by being a mom, you're at home, that's your calling in life at this point, and you're doing what you should be doing. And anything else is just extra, but it's not essential.
All right. Well, that's great to, we're kind of like on opposite sides of the front here in the battle. You know, we can support one another in prayer.
Well,
babies, and you can get the word, stir the waters, Patrick.
Thank you. And I do count on your prayers. So please do remember me when you pray. And yes, know that Relevant Radio is here to do that very thing. We want to help. The reason we are on the air is to help people get to heaven. And in so doing, we're going to do everything we can to the best of our abilities to speak the truth in love. So we'll do that part, that's for sure. But we sure rely upon your prayers. Thanks, Irina. I appreciate it very much. Let's go now to Allison in Minneapolis. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for helping us get to heaven. I am
helping each other, right?
Because how can we tell? Well, I think the fruits are definitely evident in your show, and I wanted to say something a little bit off of the mother who was talking just now, saying that, you know, she feels somewhat discouraged about what she can do. And I would just say, keep praying for people in like the social justice warrior community, because conversions are really possible. I'm an ex social justice warrior. I was trained to be one from a very young age. Yep.
Tell me about that.
And I experienced a radical conversion because I was very extreme. I was a feminist and everything. I majored in women's studies, and I got to the end of it. Okay. And it was horrible. And I got on my knees, repented, and I experienced the love of Christ. And I remember it was a night and day shift. And the next morning, like, I was completely changed, and I was no longer interested in the SJW politics, anything like that. And so
what does SJW stand for? I don't know that acronym.
Social Justice Warrior.
Oh, okay,
I made it up.
Okay.
But yeah, so Social Justice Warrior, I was like really into that stuff, and I exhausted it. I was very extreme, and I exhausted that that mentality and that platform. And what people are looking for in that community is they're looking for God and God's love, and they're looking for justice and God's justice. And so if they can be righted through prayer and through love and support, they know they're wrong. They know that they're doing the wrong thing. When you ask them what their moral vision is, they don't have one. And so that really bothers them a lot, to not have a moral vision, to not know what's right and wrong.
Actually, what about people?
If you can ask them.
I'm fascinated by this. What about people, let's say, who style themselves as anti-fascist? And they themselves are fascist in their own tactics.
Yeah.
Right.
They're totalitarianism.
Do you think that when they're out there creating mayhem and punching Nazis, et cetera, so to speak, do you think that they realize that what they're doing is stupid and wrong, or are they so convinced that that doesn't enter their mind?
Well, they're so far away from God, and they're so entrenched in sin, because the whole paradigm is it's about collecting sins, just like heavier and heavier and heavier, to the point where it's like, it's so trendy. And if they experience the love of God, they're going to drop down their sins, but they have to experience the love of God first. And witnessing, prayer, just being yourself. They see you, they see what you're doing. They see the faithful people. I had people when I was in that lifestyle, that were just very loving, and I had relatives that were praying for me and everything, and of course I called them a racist or whatever, but at the end of the day, I think that's what saved me, were the prayers and the witnessing of Jesus Christ's true love, because Jesus Christ was an activist. You know, Jesus Christ came for the poor, and that's what they're looking to do. And because I think that the Catholic Church has such a strong social teaching, that could really bring a lot of people back into the church, because that's what they're wanting. They're wanting to serve the poor and everything like that. But to answer your question about why they don't see that what they're doing is like what they're fighting, I think it's just the hypocrisy of the actual like philosophy or whatever. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Allison. I'm so glad to know you're out there listening. I'm so happy to hear about your conversion. Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it. All right. Hour three starts right after this. So please don't go anywhere. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.